The brilliant Ignacy Monreal talks about collaborating with Gucci's former creative director, Alessandro Michele, his relationship with his work, and his experience creating sets for Teatro dell'Opera di Roma. It's time to dive in.
How can I help you today?
How can I help you today?
I have to tell you something. Every time I'm reading about a cool collaboration or something interesting, you involve. Doesn't matter is with Gucci, Mercedes, Runard, or musicians. I mean, you are everywhere. What's going on with you? I mean, how are you keeping up with this madness?
Well, that's what keeps me going. It's because I like to be entertained. I get bored easily. So, also in Spanish, we have this saying that it sounds really bad when you translate it, but me apunto un bombardeo, which means like you go to whatever plan sounds good. So I jump on any ship to see what's up, and I end up doing like random stuff that I never thought I could. And that's a great privilege that I have with my work, is that I get to try things that I never thought I would, and then I get paid for it. And that's good. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
That's it. So there is no such thing as a master plan, right? It's not like you have an idea or you can, okay, 5 years from now or 2 years from now, I want to be doing this. Just kind of came about.
No, because I had one and then I had this master plan that was not very ambitious and I surpassed it very young and like unexpectedly. So then I was left with no plan, and this was a plan that I had like growing up until, and then I managed to get it done by 24. So I was like, damn, now what? And so now I was a bit lost, you know, in a good way, but I was like, so I decided not to have a plan and just like go with the flow and surf the wave. And there is some goals that I would like to do, and there's some other goals that I would never like even consider them to happen, and they happen. So like, I think better let it to the destiny, if that's the thing, decide for me. In the meantime, I'll just have fun.
Hey, if we could only listen to those words of wisdom, what plans were those? What were the big plans that you reached at so early age?
Oh, my plan was to leave home and move to either the US or United Kingdom. And I didn't cross the ocean. But I stayed. I moved to the United Kingdom. And my most ambitious plan was to become a graphic designer for a big company. And so I did. And then I did better. And then I quit. And then I started painting. And I did much better than being on a corporate job. So that's when the Gucci collaboration came about. And once came through, which was unreal and quite life-changing, to be honest. Then I was like, what now? So I changed city and I started from scratch and I kept trying. Went back to oil painting. Well, back. I started oil painting after that because I was doing everything digital. So a lot of open open things that I'm putting here.
Yeah, no, listen, I love it. But that's an interesting thing. How did the collaboration came about?
Well, they reached out to me, obviously. I was not like, hey, hire me. That's not how it works. But no, I think it was different. There were like different points that brought it all together. It was a time when Gucci was changing creative director and Alessandro Michele was starting, when we met for the first time. So it was more, I guess it was more accessible and available than what it became later, because it became this juggernaut. You know, it was already big, but like in those years, I think Gucci made history for making the most amount of money any brand has ever made ever. In those days. So before that, he was more accessible. And I had a boyfriend that worked at Gucci. But when Alessandro stepped in as a creative director, he decided to leave. So he asked me to do a little painting as a goodbye, as a thank you. And I did. But also a friend of mine, Coco Capitan, who was also collaborating with them, was working with them. So I think overall, in the end, he found me through Instagram. Because like there were a bunch of people that like were connecting us, I guess. I don't know. We should ask him.
Well, we'll make a special request. We'll send an email and say, hey, we need an answer to this. So
could you verify this story? This is my take on the story. I don't know if
Because
it's
we
that's
take,
how it went.
yeah, we take journalism very seriously here.
This is full opinion, no actual facts.
That's funny. But listen, collaboration is an interesting word, and you were collaborating with such a big personalities as well. I mean, Alessandri, some of the big brands. Tell me how do you find yourself pitching ideas or coming up with ideas, and how you deal with the feedback come back to you?
But as well as like anybody can. I love collaboration, that to start with. I think because I like, as I said, I like to keep things fun. It's like painting is like the greatest relationship in my life. So like any marriage, you need to keep it spice it up from time to time. So collaboration helps with that because it takes you out of your not your comfort zone, but like your formulas, so to say, because you need to compromise, and not just compromise, but adapt and learn new things with another person, creative view of another person or brand or whatever. Feedback. So I love good feedback. I don't know, but I do not like at all senseless feedback. So, and by that I mean sometimes you ask a why, and the question is, and the answer is because, and that only makes me want to like follow my my own vision even more. But through that, I learned a lot as well. Like recently, I did the set design for a ballet here in Italy. Well, here now because I'm in Lisbon now, but in Rome for the opera in Rome. And obviously, it's an art form ballet that has a lot of rules and restrictions, and it's quite rigid. And that's I actually found really interesting. And here's what I'm thinking of. I was like, so why can we not do it this way? And the answer most of the time was like, because it is not done this way. And I was like, that's not a good reason. Then why is it not? If you tell me it is not done this way because the light doesn't go well, or because you don't read the lines of the body, blah, blah, blah. That's a good reason. Just because not. So how do I deal with feedback? I always like to have an answer. So if somebody doesn't give me an answer, then I don't deal with it. Not that I deal with it wrong, but then I keep questioning it until I get a proper, reason for things to be a certain way.
The story you just told us about the ballet, there's restrictions how you can do certain things. Do you find that sometimes those restrictions, when it's been well explained to you, it kind of give you opportunity to push it forward and be more creative? Sometimes like limitation will force you to think outside the box, kind of, per se.
Definitely. I mean, in fact, I like to work with certain restrictions. And for me, when you work with these big collaborations with brands, at the end of the day, I see briefing as these positive restrictions. Like they come with like these are the, or maybe Gucci didn't have any brief, so that was full on my own. But other brands come with the specific things that they want, so then they give you the tools that you need to work around them. And that I find more interesting than sometimes just be like, do whatever, because then it's endless possibility, and I get overwhelmed by endless possibility. If I go to a restaurant and the menu is too long, I just can't. This applies the same when it comes to work. It's like I need to have like a frame within I can work. And I love, like, I don't love restrictions, but I love to push them and see, like, and play with those restrictions and see how far I can go and get away with it. It's a cheeky game. I have
It
fun.
is, right? But that's the thing, and that's something I'm interested for you. Like when you have this conversation about collaboration, what are the things you're looking at first? Are you looking who you're collaborating with, the limitations or the possibilities? And I mean, are you enjoying the people you're collaborating with? I like some criterias they're looking for before you sign up.
So it depends on the project. For instance, this project at the ballet was amazing because it was all team effort, and it was very unlike what I'm used to, which is me working alone, home alone. Some of the times there's a money factor. I will not lie. If they pay well, I'll collaborate. But most of the time for me is trying something new and something that I've never done before, or working with somebody that I admire or that I want to learn something from. I mean, this is a big cliche, but like try to work with people that know more than you do. So for instance, in this project with the ballet when we did the Bayadere, all the team I was working on is people with over 30 years experience. Mm-hmm. Like they were very like, some of them almost about to retire. Like my head of, I don't know, il capo di allestimento, I don't know how you say it, it's like the guy that controls backstage, he's deaf from age. Mm-hmm. And the guy that's doing the lights is, I think, going blind. But they have such a, which is, was the great irony, but they did a beautiful job and they have such great experience. And it was a prerogative for me in this project to work with like all the, like, I don't want to say old artisans, but like all these people that have years and years of experience that can teach me things that I'm coming with a fresh brand. Like I don't know anything about theater. So I was like very curious and asking a lot again, like why? And these people were teaching me while I was working and telling them what to do. And that's how we created collaboration. And it was fascinating for me. And also
is there anything that did you learn anything on this past, I'm saying, did you learn anything on this past collaboration that you feel like something you're going to carry on, like as an artist for the rest of your life?
Definitely. I learned a lot. I learned how to humble myself because I had a lot of, well, I think, but at least a little bit. I had all these ideas in my head and then when I started like seeing it come together on stage, because I only saw it finished the day before the opening, like on the dress rehearsal. That's when all like lights, costume, makeup, everything came together, and not even then was like finished. I finished. I saw it the day of the opening. And all these crazy ideas that I had in my head that I was like so sure that I was like, these people have no idea because, you know, they've never done it. And then I was like, nah, it would have looked awful. Thank God that they know what they're doing. But I guess that one, that comes from team effort. It's like trusting your team and trusting what they do. And that was so important for me. Also, like the technique that we use to create those sets, which is called, they call it pittura alla italiana, which basically means painting alla italiana. It's a technique created by this theater over 200 years ago and then expanded all over Europe in other theaters. But now it's the only theater, along with Palermo in South, that have an atelier that keeps doing this job. So it's like almost like a going extinct technique. And my prerogative was, I want to work with that technique. They hadn't done a new set in more than 7 years. And the last one, it was partly because it's not cool anymore, I guess, or people like set designers don't use this. And I was like, no, we're going to use every resource in this theater and we're going to make something beautiful out of what you already have. We don't need flashy things from the outside. And that was part of the beauty of this project because it was more sort of like seeing this team of people that they were dormant in a way, like, regaining faith in what they do. And they were saying, they were complaining, this is super difficult what you asked us to do, but they were like lobbying from the inside. Now they're lobbying, I think, the director of the theater to let me do an opera because they want to do another one. And that's when you know that we did a beautiful job, because it's beyond just like looking good on stage, is the energy that the team created. So collaboration is key, my friends. I say that because I work alone from home in my pajamas most of the time. So that was the most beautiful experience that I had in the recent years.
You said earlier exhausting. That you like... This is awesome. Sorry. No, it's okay. You said earlier that you enjoy working by yourself, like working alone, being home by yourself. Mm. Is that something that you always done since a young kid, or something that as you start developing your method, how you like to work, you start kind of figuring it out later on?
I think I've always done it like that. I should have evolved my method to like not do it anymore. I should have a team of people if I had like a proper business mind, which I do, but not in creating a studio. I'm delegating. So I think it's always been that way. I think it needs to, there's room for evolution there eventually. But I have fun this way. I like to combine both. Nothing is absolute. If I was all day like work, I think if I spent all day doing teamwork in the theater, then I get bored of it. And I would crave to be by myself. Actually, once we finished, I came here to Lisbon. I've been alone in my house for a week with my dog. thinking and sketching, because I spend so much time around people also in Italy, especially in Rome. Things are very stress is carried with a lot of shouting and a lot of passion, which I'm used to because I'm Spanish. But you know, at the end of the day, it's like, wow. So like now here I'm in my little world, in my little cave at peace, and I managed to like think new things because you didn't ask me this, but I'm going to connect it with something that I've been thinking about these days. And I've been thinking for the last past months. It's very important also to like develop bad ideas. That's what I'm saying, because I think of all these things. And in order to leave room for new ideas, I was found myself that I came here. I was like, okay, now what? Like you have free time. So what should you do? And I'm like, oh, I only have bad ideas. Like, I was like, well, develop them because maybe they become something good. But also by developing and putting them down on paper, then you leave new room for other ideas to happen and new concepts to come. And if it doesn't work today, that doesn't mean that it will not work in 5 years. So if anything, like write or draw everything down and keep that as your like dictionary of ideas or encyclopedia or like your stash. Because I was going through old sketches from maybe like 2018 when I opened one sketchbook. One sketchbook that I first heard that I was doing all these sketches for Gucci that they never saw the light because I thought they were shit. And now I was looking at them, and I'm like, damn, they're like better than some of the things I painted. So sorry, I'm going places, but yeah, and like it's important to develop those bad ideas as well, because otherwise you keep thinking about them, like what if.
So you're using this almost like an exercise. I mean, you're working out that creative muscle. Is that more or less the sketches, develop the ideas, or is just more kind of a way to get things out of your head and quiet down a little bit? Because I'm sure your mind can be sometimes so overwhelmed, it's so busy with ideas and you know in concepts and things that you want to pursue. So like putting them on writing or sketching kind of is a way to release and release them and make sure more space for other things.
Yeah, I never thought about it as a workout, like because I'm not really good at that. So I was like, I do it mostly again because I have fun. Because I think my whole obsession with enjoying the process is after working with doing so many projects that I really did not enjoy, and that's the nature of the job. I mean, like, whatever. But painting is something so personal and like. And I know this sounds cheesy, but my only reason for living is to paint. So when it's something so personal, and then you end up doing projects, and you have this like top level management person being like, but I don't like the color. And you're like, what? Things like this that don't come with like, oh, I don't like the color because this is not what we're trying to do. It's not just because. And there's a lot of chefs in the kitchen. I try to have fun whenever I can. So I don't do it so much as to work out or like, oh, this like thing that I plan, I have to come here. And like, I found that it works out, works to release it, but it's more because I have fun thinking stuff. So if my head is full of ideas, I need to find new space. So I put them down, I put them aside and I see where I keep going. Because sometimes my best ideas are my most stupid ideas. That I had real stoned in my sofa, and like, and those are the most successful ones, unfortunately. But also because they're the simplest ones, they're not full of, you know, they're just a core thing that works in every language and almost for every culture, I hope. Everybody gets it. And that's why they're good ideas. They're not like overdressed and ornament. I don't know if
How
I'm
would you?
making sense.
No, yes, listen, no, for sure. Hey, that's what we're here, so we can just pick in your brain and see what comes out of it. But I'm curious about the evolution of your own artistic vision. I mean, we all evolve as a people, and I'm sure you've been evolved as well as an artist, but it seems like you keep bringing to the idea of fun. It needs to be fun, right? At what point that kind of click it to you and he's like, you know what? Yeah, sometimes I work in projects, I don't love it and I had to do it for many other reasons. But at what point they click it to you and say, okay, listen, my main goal here is to have fun. It's either if I'm doing something for myself, something more personal, like painting, or something more commercial with a big brand, I need to find a way to have fun.
I think it came recently, like last year at some point. By now, like in March, no, it was more me, March. I was doing 7 projects simultaneously, alone. And it was a lot. And I went, I do that though. I go into times of my life that I like the hermit period where I take too much that I can chew. Then I manage, but I just don't see the day of light and I'm close painting, really unhealthy hours, not proper sleep, not proper food. Don't do this at home. And then I was like, why am I wasting my days, like wasting, no, it was for profit, but like, why am I spending all of this time if, like, I'm dreading it? So how, like, you know, then I use that bad energy and I put that anger into my personal work to be like and then it works. But that came the point where I was like, okay, whatever you do, even not al- you will not always manage to do it that way, but try to have fun. That's why I did this project at the opera. I was like, this was so much fun. I was like, I was not sleeping either. I was exhausted. It was ridiculously difficult for what it should have been. It was 3 times more difficult because whatever, logistics. I had so much fun. I was like a little kid. I was going home being like, and I was, would wake up, I would go to bed at 3 a.m. like thinking about it, and then we'd wake up at 6 out of like excitement of like, it's like 1 week to go. And I was like, and I would go out and keep doing, you know, keep thinking, I don't know. I was a bit, fun was a big driving force. But if you're, another big concept for that I found in the last new year, in the last recent years, sorry for my English, was that, at least for me, it's very important that the works are timeless as well, or trying to find this quality of timelessness. Because it should be able to talk about, tell a small story to a larger scale today, but hopefully it will be something that also will move people in 50 years, in 100 years, in 200 years. Of course, it's out of my control, but
yes,
that's one approach of finding something that will survive the passage of time, because some things age really badly. Like, and I don't have anything specific, but there's certain movies, certain paintings, certain books, and we've seen it in the last few years, things that we love that now are completely out of out of the current sensitivities. So for me, timelessness also comes with a way of transcending the current morality, or like not transcend, like, or maybe find a way to tell a story that is important now, but again, I'm repeating myself, but it will be important in the future, or could have been important in the past as well. I think it's better to predict something that would have worked before and worked now than what can work in the future. But yeah, I don't know. I'm rambling.
But now listen, to touch into that timeless idea that you talk about, are you observing society in general? Are you observing what we're talking about? Are we observing how we're living? I mean, I'm interested.
No, I'm observing how I feel about it.
Okay.
Like, it's not so much. Yeah, if I feel like it's more like an intimate connection with it. It's like more something like it touches a certain emotion, and it's not too rational as well. Then I know that it can surpass. You know, that it will touches me, will touch somebody else for sure. But it's about leaving enough space to be abstract so that it can capture more of people's imaginations. You need to leave room to your audience in the piece in order for them to project themselves onto it so that they can connect. If you chew everything and give them everything cooked, maybe they're not as engaged. There's the power of mystery. Like, you know, it's a piece, it's a big power. Otherwise, you know, Catholic Church wouldn't be there. Or monarchy, for that instance. But mystery has a great power. And that comes from a book I read, and it was one of my mentors that gave me a book when I was 20. The fashion designer that now passed. It was great. And it's called In Praise of Shadows by Tanizaki. I don't know if it's full name. It's a Japanese journalist. And it's all about it's a book all written all about how he's trying to build a traditional country house in Japan, and he can't because of us Westerners have come in and like technology has meddled with all his possibilities to do so. And he compares the way they see light and the way we see light And the whole episode, chapter dedicated to the toilet, which is great. But how, you know, how there's, in darkness, there's room for guessing and mystery. When everything is bright and white and like clean, there's no room to like second guess and imagine things. So I put that, try to bring that into my work.
I love the idea.
I don't know if I succeed.
Listen, the idea of mystery is something that we hear a lot from creative people. They just find this connection. They can't quite explain it, where it comes from. You know, it's something very mystic, as you said. I think there is a musician. He's a music producer, Rick Rubin.
Oh, yeah, I love.
Yes. So recently he has his book came out, I think, a few months ago. And oh, no. I had the chance to read it. And it's all about that. It's like there is a source beyond that. When you tap into that, you just, your priority as an artist is to stop everything you're doing and just emerge in that creative juice, right? So do you kind of, you kind of share the same belief in that aspect? Is something beyond that you can really quite put in words? Words is not enough to explain what it is.
Well, our creative work is the way we explain what it is, I guess. That's the baby or the end result of that. If I were a poet, maybe I could find words. Unfortunately, I'm not, that's not my forte, but definitely big fan of Rick. What happened is that he put words into thoughts, more than thoughts, feelings that I already, that I shared with what he was saying. Like this concept, or at least that's how I saw, like ideas kind of like don't belong to anybody. They kind of like, there's this cloud or whatever, they pre-exist. Yes. And anybody can tap into them. You just need to like find you're in a highway, you know, so you need to find the right exit. And it can be more than one person that goes into like through that exit, because normally he says so, and it's true. It's like, you know, history and whatever situation we're surrounded by pushes you to go in a certain direction, not you, but a bunch of people. I think that it's just the first one that arrives just like pees on it like a dog, and it's like, it's mine. That doesn't mean that it belongs to them. And that's how it feels to me when I have ideas. It's like there's things that I am giving service to. And if I do a good job, is I was true, like, you know, I was true to that idea that doesn't belong to me. I'm just a tool letting it happen. And you feel that way when you're painting. Is the paint, when I manage to be painting good, is when the painting is painting itself. And normally when I'm thinking too much is when I'm making mistakes. And then at some point, it's like meditation. I'm painting. At some point, I start thinking about, I don't know, a conversation that I had drunk 5 years ago, and I said something embarrassing or whatever, or like that time that my mother told me something. And then I'm not realizing that I'm painting, and painting is coming out magically, like, and beautifully. Sometimes, and I notice in my work, is if you see something, it's too refined and too like detailed. And that's, I hate when they say that I do hyper-realism. Because it's not, but when it looks like that, it's because I was so insecure and I didn't know what I was doing. And you can see it, and that's where, like, pisses me off. But yeah, it's like you're a conduit. That's how it feels. I know it sounds cheesy, but that's how I experience it. So Rick put it in very beautiful words many times. I've also like read the book and watched many of his podcasts as well, like that he goes around doing interviews. And
yes, I think he's definitely a great source for people to listen and have an idea in terms of the
creative. He's a wise man.
Yeah, he looks like, you know, a very ancient wizard. You know, so he's definitely coming apart.
He's playing the part.
He's playing the part, exactly. But also, a lot of people will make the argument that creativity can be taught. That you can exercise, you can practice, you can, you know, that it's not like just a few of us born with it. What do you think about that?
I think we're all born with it. And like anything, I mean, nothing is absolute. Like you can do both. I think that some people have more like a proclive, I don't know how you say it. Some people are more drawn to it, so it comes out more naturally than others. But even for somebody that comes out naturally, there's certain exercises that you can do, and suddenly you find yourself like with new, fresh ideas. It's, nothing is absolute. Like either or, it works. Whatever works best for each one, you know. In my case, I know both work, I don't tend to do the exercise part much, but when I've done it, it was so rewarding. I've done it like very encountered occasions because I didn't know what to do, and it worked out beautifully.
Do you have any method that you like to do when you're stuck with something, like perhaps something that's not really flowing the way you like? I mean, or an idea that's not really, the vision's not really being fulfilled the way you come up with, begin with. How do you deal with that? Or you just push through it?
Depends, because sometimes it's also another big cliche. You have to trust the process. And sometimes, for instance, one thing that it's, you know, basic learning that is a few years back, I was struggling to start or like to start painting because I wanted everything to be perfect from the minute one. So like I was so afraid to fuck it up at the beginning that I was not even starting. And then trust the process. And each time, still today, a little bit less. Every time I have a blank canvas in front of me, I am like convinced that it's going to be a failure. So always I'm surprised when I manage to make it happen. And it's been this learning in the last few years, learning this. It's like, trust the process. You will arrive there. You don't know how. And that's the beauty of it. It's a little adventure. Also, and this is not kosher, but I also smoke a big fat joint. I'm going my sofa and think about it, and it helps. Having times of solitude and times of doing nothing, like this is what I'm doing now after all these crazy last weeks, came here. It's like have time to think and see what you want to do next or not, or like all these ideas, see what comes up with, you know. I came up with a few cool things. I don't know if they're going to work, but allow yourself to have fun thinking, I would say.
Do you sometimes spend yourself time thinking about the business aspect? Because, I mean, you're definitely an artist through and through, but, you know, there's an element of business, a branding around yourself, too, who you are and the work you've been doing. Do you kind of think about a little bit, like how your image, how you portrayed it, how you want to be perceived by the media, by the public, per se, or, you know, or that's something that you just kind of let it go?
Oh, it's beyond my control. So, like, there's not much I can do about it. I can't think about it, but it is like, then it goes nowhere. So I try to like be more productive. The business side of it, though, I post rationalize it more than think about it from the beginning. It's like first I come up with what something I want to do, and then immediately after I find like an outlet to put it in the world or not. But normally that's how it starts. It starts with like, oh, I would love to do this, and then see. Like with this this project of the ballet, I wanted to go as an intern to learn from these painters and to paint large scale. That was my ambition. And then I turned out designing the set and telling them what to do. But there was that was the goal. It was like, oh, first I want to paint in large scale, and then I'll see how, you know, how we can manage to put it in the world. And then it turned out that I ended up doing the whole thing. But same with other things, like my dirty dishes, the painting that I do, I started to doing for fun because I didn't know how to paint oil, and I wanted to practice oil. And the best way to practice oil is through still life. That's how they teach you in school. So I was like, oh, I'm going to do still lives. But then I was like, well, I'm going to do fun still lives. I was not even much. So I was like, I'm going to do still lives of my food because I'm eating a lot because I just moved to Italy. And then I had a collection. I was like, oh, this starts to look like a big table. This is so cool. I was like, oh, this would be a good way to present. It would be on a table after having finished so eating with friends. And then we put the things. And then I was like, oh, this sounds good. We should put it on a gallery. And that's when we were like, you see what I'm, does it make sense what I'm explaining? It's like first I come up with what I want to do and then how I'm going to present it. And thank God, or whoever I have to thank, I'm not really religious, but because I started marketing as well, I have a good sense of like how to then find a way to put things in places. So it comes in a way naturally.
I want to talk to you a little bit when you were a little kid, like growing up in Barcelona. What was it like for you? Were you always this very creative kid? Did you fit in school? Did you have fun? Were you outcasted? Tell me a little bit about what, like a 10-year-old you, what was going on back then?
What was going on back then? I don't really remember much, but it was all pretty chill. We lived in a... Mm-hmm. And like in the woods, my father was a horse vet, so would go visit the animals often. I was pretty chill. I was not an outcast, but I was not popular either. I was like, I always like to be on my own, like not on my own, but like have the freedom to do the whatever I want. So neither of those positions are appropriate for that. So I just think I wasn't. I just wanted to get out of there to see the world. You know, it was. I'm a '90s kid, so everything happened on already on screen. So I was like, I want to see what where all this is coming from. And hence my drive to go to Anglo-speaking countries, because that's all the culture that we received, mostly. And I didn't even think that painting was an option. Like I've always been a bit, unfortunately, a bit way too practical and too like, I don't know if horoscope plays a thing here, but I'm a Virgo, so I'm like, that's why I wanted to be a graphic designer. Like my ambitions were very like painting, that's not a job. You know, the world was telling me that's not a job, and I was like, of course it's not a job. So I wanted to like be able to make a living and just go out and explore the world. And then moving to London, that's when I realized that it is a job and a serious one indeed. It's a profession, and it's something that I could do and that I did very well, and it was a special thing because, you know, before I thought having a special thing was not good because nobody wanted it, and then I realized that a few people can do it, so might as well make the most out of it, and so I tried. And I went straight. You see, because my childhood, I don't remember that much. It's not that eventful. So I go back more into my teenage years
Teenage, the
upwards.
trouble years, the trouble years.
Not even travel years. It's because I moved from the woods into the big city. I moved to Madrid, and that's when things started happening. Before that, I was just, you know, being at home and in the woods and like playing my Game Boy and things like that.
I'm curious about that in your family. Were your parents even supportive of exposing you to art and in taking you to museums and places like that? I mean, you're from Barcelona, so everywhere you look, you have history around you. So it's different, of course, different when
Yeah.
you're born in Europe. But were they like supportive of your choices? I mean, you say you went into the graphic design, but when was that call that you made? Hey, by the way, I'm quitting my corporate job and I'm gonna go become an artist.
That's when I was in London already, but I was like, as soon as I left my house in Madrid and I went to London, I had like, because I'm proud, I was like, I want to make a living out of my own. So my mother's like, let me send you money. I was like, no, I want to suffer on my own. But at least I know that like everything that I got, I got it. Like I'm very thankful that I managed to make it work. But they were very supportive. Like they were like, yeah, whatever makes you happy, you know. Like I was a kid, and they sent me to painting classes. Then I decided painting was not cool enough, and I wanted to go to the comics. So they helped me find a school in nearby that taught comic, and they sent me there. And yeah, and every time if I needed, I don't know. Then I started painting with a tablet when I was 15, and so I was like, oh, I need a tablet, blah blah. And for my birthday, they got me the tablet so I could start painting. So they were always like encouraging me to do. They didn't expect me to do anything in particular. They just said, be happy and enjoy. So that was good. And my brother's the serious one. My brother's a neurologist. So let's check. He's the older one. He's the straight one. He's going to carry over the family genes. I can do whatever you want. I can do whatever I want.
That's funny. No, that's actually super funny. You said that you're in Lisbon now, right? So what
Yes.
made you to move to Lisbon? What was the whole pitch behind it?
The opportunity arose, and I was like, why not? I like change because that again, I get bored easily, so I like to spice things up. And one of the things I ways I do it is by changing city every like 4 or 3 4 years. So I still go back to Rome a lot because my partner is there, but I'm mostly here. And that also helps. The fact that I'm like taking a plane every 2 3 weeks up and down, it keeps you. I feel like if once I fall into quotidianity is the word,
Like a
then
routine.
like a routine, then exactly. If I fall into a routine, then I fall into a formula, and like it's comfortable to be in a formula, but it's boring to you, and therefore it's boring to the rest, and that's why I'm like. I like to keep it always a bit unstable, if I can. So the new things happen, you know?
Yeah, I know. I love Lisbon. I've been there many, many times. I'm from Brazil originally, but my parents live in Lisbon for a bit. But I've noticed a lot of people moving to Portugal. You know, a lot of artists, architects, designers moving to Portugal, perhaps.
And it's very young crowd here compared to Rome, which is like mostly older people. But I like the change. That's why I like the two cities that have things that make them different. So it's enjoyable.
What's now? I mean, you mentioned you're staying home with the dog. What's the name of the dog again?
Boris.
Boris.
Yeah, he Boris. Boris that was funny.
He's behaving now. He's quiet.
Yeah, he's sleeping somewhere. Thank God.
How long are you planning to stay there? Are you have a project, upcoming project, or are you just kind of waiting for the message to come to you?
I am both. Like, I have potential projects. I have a lineup of projects, but it's the first time when I finished this relay. It's the first time, I think, in like 8 years that I don't have anything to do. And it feels amazing. And my agent's calling me, like, we have all these jobs. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do anything. I want to be like doing. I mean, I'll be honest with you. What I did is I was like, okay, the opera's finished. I'm going to Lisbon. And my boyfriend doesn't let me play PlayStation. So I was like, my plan is to go to Lisbon. And for a week, I'm going to play PlayStation, Hogwarts Legacy, and smoke weed. Sorry, this is too much information. It's not professional. But that's what I needed, to do nothing. And it feels amazing. And in fact, by doing nothing, I'm suddenly like coming up with things that I want to do. Because then if I have things on my to-do list, then I don't allow time for me to think what I want to do. And when I get bored, it's like, oh, I would love to do this. And then I start thinking of an idea, as I told you before, and then it eventually becomes a serious project. Like, that's, but it sounds like this, wouldn't it be nice to, I don't know. I don't have anything in particular. I have a few things. I hopefully, and I'm manifesting it, or like touch wood, maybe I'm jinxing it. The ballet was a big success, much bigger than they anticipated. And hopefully I'm getting to do an opera, and that would be amazing. Because opera is like where you can go wild. There are no rules there. So that would be really sick. That's weird.
You know, I feel very lucky because for those who are listening or watching us, when we first reached out to you, you were still like in the final weeks of the theater.
Yeah.
So you're like, right now it's impossible for me, but maybe after. And you mentioned to me, we had a call before this a couple weeks ago, and he's like, I never done a podcast before. I'm like, oh, great. We're going to be the first one.
It's true.
So I'm just glad that we squeezed in a little bit of time for us between the PlayStation and we and all the creativity that we squeezed a little time for us here so we can chat and people get a chance to meet you a little bit more. But before I go, there's three things that we ask every single one that comes to the podcast. And I think I sent you this. So we need a book, a recommendation for a book, something to see, like a movie or a TV show or something that you think we should check out. And a suggestion for our next guest. Who do you think we should have here at the podcast?
Damn, you see, this is where I should have read the questions because now I'm going to improvise properly. So the book, I already mentioned one book, so we can go with that one, which is In Praise of Shadows by Tanizaki. Or why not, because we talked about it, The Creative Act is called. What's the Rick Rubin book?
Yes, Rick something Rubin. Like that, yeah.
The Creative Act, in fact. So there you go, two nice books. A movie to watch. I watched this crazy animation movie. Well, it's not that crazy, but it's beautifully made, French, from the 1950s, called The King and the Mockingbird. That actually was a big source of inspiration for Miyazaki and other ones that I hadn't watched before. And it's beautifully made. Nothing, it's just because I watched it 2 days ago and I was like, wow, this is a great piece of art. And a suggestion for the next one. I would say, damn, I don't know. I have to think because, I mean, there's so many people, but.
First ones to come to your mind. Close your eyes, open it, and say the first name that comes to you.
Coco Capitan, the girl I mentioned before. She's a great photographer and artist from Andalusia. She's fantastic. And we work together, like we kind of became very close to Gucci back in the days. Or I have more. You see, that's why you say one. Ariana Papadimitropoulos, she's a girl, she's an artist from LA, also a great friend of mine, and she, her world of fantasy is beyond. And she's a fantastic artist that we talk a lot through because we had a lot of conversations. She went to art school and I didn't. And she was always telling me, like, in art school, they discourage you to, like, you know, pursue. Sometimes they were telling me, like, oh, your ideas are too childish. And I'm the one, like, paint those unicorns, girl. Like, go for it. And because her fantasy world is her identity. So art school was, like, castrating it. So we have a lot. She comes to Rome a lot. And we have a lot of dreamy conversations and, like, go visit ruins and stuff. Yeah.
Hey, I have two little girls in my house, so unicorn is a big hit here. So you know that.
Yeah. When did we decide these things are not cool anymore? Like this, I think this is a bit controversial, but this idea of the tortured artist, it's so early 20th century patriarchal bullshit. Like, you know, we've been tortured all our life. Yes, but like. Some of the greatest arts were commissions. Like most of the art in our history are commissions up until the beginning of the 20th century when people started painting what they wanted. Because finally it was elevated from artisanship to artist. So all this preconception of what arts needs to be or how serious or how blah, 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 it's like, I don't know, it's senseless to me. I tried to make sense out of the art industry and I couldn't. So that's my take. I don't know why I'm finishing in this note.
I don't see any better way to finish this with this big statement that we're going to use as a hammer.
Fuck everybody. No! No, but it makes no sense. But like anything, like if you stop and think about things too much, you realize that we take too many things for granted. And if you question them, you're like, but why do they work this way? Most of the time, there's not an answer. And we just take for like, assume things the way they are because we like to, because we feel safe. That doesn't mean that they're supposed to be that way.
Yeah,
you know. Sorry.
Thanks again. Don't be sorry. We could do this for another hour. I know that for a fact. But I know you got plans to do. I'm sure you're ready. Itch to go do your thing. And I want to thank you again. You are someone that we've been watching, and we're big fan of what you're doing. And now that I got the chance to get to know you a little bit more and see your energy, your enthusiasm about what you do, it's contagious. So I'm so thrilled we had the time, and I really appreciate you taking the time. Thanks again.
Thank you.